ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, Diet Time is here. That's right, it's a Thanksgiving bonus episode of Kill by Kill. Well, greetings and salutations, Internet. It's your old pal, Patrick Hamilton, coming to you once again from Plymouth, Massachusetts, or as close to it as we can possibly afford. This is the Kill by Kill podcast, where we are dedicated to celebrating the least discussed component of any horror film, the characters. We will be unpacking all the gory details of Eli Roth's fake trailer for Thanksgiving as a change of pace on this Black Friday for you, in the hopes that, well, a family reveler's untimely end is just the beginning of the jokes that we can make about them. And as always, there's only one person I trust to provide the right kind of stuffing for every episode, the one and only Gina Radcliffe. How are you doing, Gina?
Happy Thanksgiving, Patrick.
Happy Thanksgiving. I hope everyone had a wonderful turkey day filled with Macy's Day parade awkwardness and lazily watching the dog show, and not losing your mind trying to prepare a meal that contains too many elements for 1,000 people at your house.
Just shaking your cane at every new young television star that appears on the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade because I don't know who this is. Who is this? Well, you know, by people scrambling around to Google this person's name to find out who they are. Every year, there's more. It's more. There's every year. That's just, I feel my encroaching decrepitude as I recognize less people on the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade.
It's a cavalcade of C-list stars who are asked, what do you feel about this parade? And everyone is unprepared to give an answer to that very simple question. It's like, you know, like, oh, I used to watch it as a kid, or the energy here is so incredible. Like, I could give you a dozen answers every single year that would make sense. No one comes prepared for this.
Like, literally the last time I was excited to see anybody in the parade, I believe it was Hall & Oates.
Listen, if they showed up yesterday during Thanksgiving, I would also register an amazing amount of excitement. Well, I don't want to worry you, Gina, but we are not alone. That is right. We have a special guest with us. He is one of the hosts of the finest classic RPG podcasts available to put into your ear holes, and he's one of our favorite guests as well, the one and only John Brandon. How are you doing, sir?
Oh, I am just fine, but why are you saying happy Thanksgiving in November? I'm really confused.
Oh, that's right. You're Canadian. When is your Thanksgiving? Again, what do you put socks on the same way? Does the water in the toilet bowl swirl in a different direction up there?
What time is it there? Isn't it like Thursday or something?
Yeah, it is Thursday in October, and happy Canadian Thanksgiving. Have either of you been to the Macy's Day Parade?
I have a couple of times, actually.
Ooh. I haven't, and I dream of it, and we keep threatening each other every year that we're
really
going to go.
It is really fucking crowded.
Yeah.
Hmm. Are the balloons cool?
They are. They are actually the best part, not surprisingly. I am a short woman, and usually when every time I've gone, I've either been stuck in the middle or in the back of the crowd, so I've never seen a single band. I hear them. I don't see them. And again, I usually found myself, like, who is that? Who? What? Who is that? Because they're not identified. You just see a float. You see, you know, 13-year-old girls screaming and jumping up and down. And I'm like, okay, I recognize the Sesame Street house. Okay, I see that. I do remember one of the first years that I went, I saw, because the Sesame Street house, that's always part of the parade. And I managed to spot Gordon. And I actually jumped up and went, Gordon!
he was a beetle.
It was a big moment for me. And I will tell you also that the balloons are enormous. I fear every time I saw the Buzz Lightyear balloon go by in particular, because that looks like he could take out a building.
Oh, wow.
And you will see some glum-looking people assigned to basically keep this balloon from launching into orbit. They're just usually underpaid Macy's employees, and they're just kind of dragging this balloon on like dozens of tethers.
They signed up to refold clothes, not hold on to a rocket ship that moves in slow motion.
Basically, yeah.
So here we are. We decided we would take a break from our Part 5 onslaught, and we had several options that we could have gone in. And I think the most obvious would have been Blood Rage as a Thanksgiving horror movie. But Blood Rage is a project. Blood Rage deserves all those characters to be talked about in the way we would normally tackle any film. And we simply do not have time to do that at this very moment. So we decided to ratchet back to a bite-sized component of Thanksgiving. And what better way to do that than Eli Roth's fake trailer for Thanksgiving, which takes place inside of the Grindhouse movie, at least the 3-hour version. That is the one that you should be watching. And so I, as always, hey, John, when was the first time you caught this trailer? Was it inside Grindhouse or did you catch it after the fact?
Last night. I did not. I wanted to go see Grindhouse, but it was only playing in one theater for a couple of weeks because it was so long. Mm-hmm. I never saw it.
My story for Grindhouse, and I'll say it briefly, but I think I may have said it on the podcast previously. I looked forward to this movie like it was Star Wars, and it was playing at the movie theater that is featured in La La Land, the one, the magical theater that they go to in Pasadena.
Oh, right.
And it is a wonderful, grand old movie house. And I went to, this was, you know, before you could really buy tickets online. So we went to dinner ahead of time and I said, let's swing by. I'll grab the tickets. That way we don't have to wait in line or anything like that. And I go in to buy tickets at the concession stand because they didn't actually have a ticket booth. I go, did a lot of people come to the 4 o'clock show? And he goes, there's like 10 people in there. And I'm like, what? What? Because you're the first person who's bought tickets for the 7 o'clock show. And I'm like, are you crazy? How is this even possible? Because I thought the hype for this was unescapable.
Yeah.
And it just landed with the dullest of thuds. And to this day, they couldn't grasp a way to sell it. I don't know. Gina, what was your experience?
To make a little sadder than that, this was the last time I ever went to a midnight premiere of a movie. There were probably about a dozen people in the theater. My standout memory, other than cackling like Sam Neill at the end of In the Mouth of Madness with the Thanksgiving trailer, was a group of young people who came in late, seemed to have no idea what they were watching, and then in Planet Terror, the scene where Bruce Willis shows up, one of the young ladies in the group yelling out, "Tom Cruise!" And then they left about a half hour later, so
they were well prepared for that motion picture.
Yeah. Is there a DVD release like that is the theatrical experience?
I have the Blu-ray, which I don't know is necessarily in print currently, but it does present it as the complete 3-hour procession.
Oh, okay.
To me it does not feel that long.
It moves at a pretty quick clip. I would think that seeing it at midnight might put you in, as Jared Rivet, our previous guest, who had gone through a Friday the 13th marathon and said once it hit a certain point, you just became angry that the movies weren't over with.
I was actually...
I can see that as a bad experience.
I actually found myself hoping there were more trailers because they're all gold. They're all... Every one of them is the highlight of the movie. And the weird little... I mean, I hate to get into one of those, you know, oh, this isn't something the young people would enjoy, but it's not something the young people would enjoy. I mean, you know, we're barely old enough to remember when, you know, you had those old-timey, you know, go buy popcorn at the concession stand and, like, the hot dog jumping into the bun and stuff like that. And, I mean, the movie theater, my local movie theater, still has ads that say thank you for not smoking and turn off your pager, but that's about as much of a you know, time capsule experience as you're going to get at this point.
The drive-in near my place has those old,
I love that shit. I love that shit so much, but I do feel like it's going to be a little lost on anybody under 30.
Yeah.
It's true, but the whole point of this was to give people an experience. And that's what I feel like it does do. It does feel like you're getting spliced together reels and you have missing cuts where, you know, something has gotten burnt and they've taken it out of the film.
Yeah, and they have
massive scratches through everything. And you're getting films that mash together genres. And as a result, it feels very much like the experience you're meant to have. And that's where I think they have trouble communicating that to anyone who doesn't have a reference for it. It's like, the whole point of this is to put you in a place that you might not have ever been before and see if you like it. I think it's hard to hold people's attention for this long, even though if you stick around, there's so many fantastic elements to it and a few unfortunate. Let's quickly go through the other trailers just to put us in a place here. It starts out with the Machete trailer before Planet Terror. Of course, Machete went on to become two different movies. So that was almost like willing it into existence. Then in between Planet Terror and Death Proof, you have three trailers. Thanksgiving is in the middle, and it's the perfect placement for it because you start off with Werewolf Woman of the SS, which is Rob Zombie. And here's my major problem with that trailer. Rob Zombie feels it necessary to put his name as the director at the end of it. And I think it ruins any momentum it has.
It's a little self-aware, yeah.
But Eli Roth is definitely mentioned in Thanksgiving.
No.
No, he's not.
He isn't.
He's in it, but his name isn't mentioned.
In the version I watched, okay, maybe I watched a weird version of it. It said Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, no, the version I watched didn't.
What?
Yeah.
Are we gonna be ultimately talking about two different things?
The things that are on YouTube, we don't entirely know. Someone might have manipulated it, but as it landed in the theater in its proper cut, it does not say Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Oh, interesting.
The only one who name stamps themselves is Rob Zombie, which takes it out of the genre he's trying to create. And while it's not a genre that I particularly love, it takes away from what he's trying to do. And I just wish someone, you know, amongst this group of directors said, you don't need to do that. Because it's not particularly a staple of those movies either. It's not like a lot of SS, you know, Elsa She-Wolf of the SS had the director's name splashed all over it. It's not a director's medium.
No, because I think a lot of directors ultimately would not want their names attached to these by the time they're done.
You're absolutely right. And so that to me is like the bummer of all of them, because it doesn't feel like he got the memo, but he didn't get it fully. And it seems like we got to let him do this because, you know, he would be perfect to do that. And then if he had seen the other ones, I think he would have given us something on the same level as his movies. Here was his opportunity to make a trailer that's on the same batshit Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2 level as his movies. And I don't feel it quite raises that bar. And then you have Don't.
Yes. I've seen that one. I love it so much.
That one is the best, I think, right?
It's the best trailer that's ever been.
Oh, yeah. It is one of the most wonderful 2 to 3 minutes of anything put to film ever.
It is a master class of how to build up to a single joke. It doesn't stop to not make other jokes. It's full of jokes. But the whole point of it is to build of the don't next Friday. That's it. That's the joke, guys. And
I think
the fact that they are able to make that happen is beautiful. I mean, you can tell that guy has had that joke in his head forever.
It's very, very English, which is the whole, like, don't. At the end, it's very polite. And I think even more so than Thanksgiving, it's just like, okay, what the fuck is happening? Because you have, I think it's Nick Frost, like, this playing this giant baby.
Straight out of the baby. You have a bunch of, you know, the haunting of Hill House and, you know, Hell House and a lot of let's go examine this haunted manor things. It's a bit of William Castle in it, but way more graphic. Oh my God, it's so good. It's so good. It doesn't waste a single frame. And I will say Thanksgiving doesn't spend a lot of wasteful time either. It is very well constructed. It's just hard to... The end jokes of both are pretty spectacular. It's just that... Don't strikes me a little bit more than Thanksgiving as an actual joke. So there's that.
Yeah, I may break my not seeing any more midnight premieres of anything if Edgar Wright makes a full length movie. Don't.
I don't know that it would ever achieve what you can achieve in that trailer, and that's the crazy thing about it. It's like,
yeah, no, it's perfect the way it is.
You don't have to have Lucy Punch doing Lucy Punch's bits. You just go, where do I know that face from? And then craziness happens. And that's all you need. And if you were to expand it, I don't know that you could, but I don't want to say that he can. All right. So let's get into Thanksgiving. Straight up into it. We have a very scratchy looking trailer. He's obviously going for something that's been dragged along the cement. And we have an opening with a POV shot that is extremely reminiscent of Halloween 2. And we also get a vision of what it's like to put together a Thanksgiving meal when you're one elderly grandma, which is chaos everywhere.
There's like bones and stuff all over the counter.
Oh, it's awful. You know, piled up in corners. It's like, how is this not cross-contaminated? It's the most horrific thing in the entire trailer.
She's also got about 20 zucchinis on the oven. There's a lot of zucchinis, and I don't know if you noticed, her cabinets are covered in pictures, just covered.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's a grandmother. Yeah. She probably has like a sweatshirt with her grandchildren's names written on in puffy paint.
She does look like my mom. She definitely has, other than the gap teeth, which is not a family trait, she looks exactly like my mom's. This is a bit disturbing.
Is it a gap or is it a missing tooth?
It looks like a gap.
It's a gap, I think.
Yeah. It's a gap? That's a hell of a gap.
On a man, I think a gap is very cute. Even slim little actor Ian Tracy, who's a Vancouver staple, is very adorable with his gap teeth.
Does he put that on his IMDb? Slim little actor?
Yeah.
Yes, a gap does not prevent one from looking attractive at all. It makes one distinctive, that is for certain. Mm-hmm. She screams in bloody murder. We can only assume that she gets stabbed, even though she shows up later in the trailer. But of course, a trailer shows you sequences out of order. So we can't think of this as a true narrative necessarily. Just that
we're given a beginning that looks
like a beginning.
Because, yeah, there's more. She does more here.
Yes.
We're really burying the lead with this narrator.
Yeah.
And his voice, which I think it was said that he was a producer on Hostel. He was somebody that worked, I mean, not an actor. He was somebody that worked with him. And this voice is just like, it's insane.
It is. It's. I tried to find a specific trailer where they were using it as a reference. The one that leapt to mind to me was the trailer for Don't Answer the Phone, which is one of the worst movies I have ever sat through in my entire life. It is trash. Not in a good way. There's not a lot of fun to be had. It's misogynistic to the point of that was the obvious intention was to be terrible to women, and they viewed this as, oh, we're gonna make a point, and the point is you're terrible to women, and it's gross. Don't ever answer the phone. Don't answer the phone. But don't. That has again, don't don't this Friday. So But that has that very low rumbly voice going on. And so I assume that's kind of what they're going for, because I couldn't find another example. I'm sure we're good. If you know what it's a direct reference to, hit us up on Twitter and we'll blast you.
And he just speaks. He speaks almost nothing in nothing except like Thanksgiving cliches and metaphors.
Yeah, someone hit pun on their keyboard. Just spit them out. He's that's for sure.
Something to the table. Thanksgiving.
I mean, it kind of, I don't know that it ever gets better than white meat, dark meat, all will be carved.
You'll be coming home for the holidays in a body bag. Yeah. it's a little Buffalo Bill kind of, but even maybe an octave lower than that.
It's so low that you have to pay attention to it. Otherwise, you would miss it entirely. It's just a rumble.
I mean, I hope that this isn't this man's actual speaking voice, because that would be terrifying.
Oh, no. You would not want to have a meeting with that. Janet, I need to know what was in the quarterly reports for quarter two of 1996. Where's Janet? She ran for her life.
You imagine just, you know, just picking up the phone and that voice is there, just saying just normal things, you know. It's like, it's funny, after you came for brunch next week. Oh, hang up the phone, block.
Hello. I'd like to order two Chinese chicken salads. One with almonds. One without. Like, oh my God, no, you can't have that. Stop calling here. I don't know who you are, but you're freaking me out. Hello, Mom. To wish you a happy Mother's Day. I hope you got the flowers. Thank you so much for giving birth to me and raising me.
Oh, God. We found a new character.
Between this and Out of Breath Jason, we've had a 1-2 punch, people. We don't have a lot of characters on the show, but I think we may have found some.
I do not like it on a boat. I do not like it with a goat.
Mommy, I don't want Daddy to read to me anymore. It all started when my father insisted on reading me my bedtime stories.
Good night, Moon. At one point, I would have been able to just rattle off that whole book. That's how ingrained it was in me. It's crazy how I could not remember any parts of that book to do the rest of that joke. So we kick it from that opening. And then, of course, we have the title card for Thanksgiving, which is Thanksgiving written out in bloody text. And
it's like stabbing a turkey. It's like the Rocky Horror font.
Exactly. Yes. The Rocky Horror font. Yes. And when he stabs that turkey, it bleeds.
Yeah. It bleeds. It's also on a platter full of cut pieces of corn on the cob, which
they look like
is not
mini
how
corns,
I've ever
though.
Seen a turkey dressed.
That can't be full-grown corn on the cobs. Those are like teeny.
No. No, yeah. No. Those are sections of corn on the cob. Those are coblets.
This is not the worst thing that's done to a turkey in this trailer, though.
There's no dressing. There's no peas. Just turkey.
Uncle Frank, you can't have salt anymore, so you're going to have to apply your own.
I think if I try to get my voice that low, I'm just going to like rupture my larynx. So I'm not going to try that.
There was an embarrassing time when I was 17, 18, where I decided I would try to talk like Christian Slater in Heathers.
That's a fair goal. Uh-huh.
So I sort of spent about maybe 6 months going like this. They sure do have an open door policy on assholes, though, don't they?
And did you like start having like a smoker's hack after a while? That seems like it'd be very rough on the throat after a while.
No, you know, it's actually a pretty comfortable voice. You can stick like Kristen Slater's been doing it for 30 years, right?
You can stick without even trying. That's just how he talks.
No, I think he saw a lot of Jack Nicholson movies. I think he was 16 and went through the John Brandon moment.
Oh yeah, I mean Heathers is definitely straight Jack Nicholson.
So we then cut to our Plymouth Thanksgiving Day parade, and we get a little bit of a glimpse at our killer's outfit, which looks reminiscent of what would eventually become the fisherman's costume in I Know What You Did Last Summer. It has a lot in common. It's black leather, and it's got a pilgrim hat, and it's so low, this guy cannot see what he's looking at. And it's impossible.
He's got little eye holes cut out in it, you don't know.
Like, I thought it was just the brim was tilted. You think that it's down over his eyes?
What was the character? Mushmouth from Fat Albert? He has the hat pulled over his face.
Nabba Rabbit. I'm a gubba kibba abba bubba. I don't could give it. So, yeah, it is tilted down very low. And he also holds his face down low so you can't see him. I mean, it's for effect. This isn't reality. We're not kidding anybody. No one meant this to be anything other than an elaborate joke.
There's a Genesis character, which I think was maybe based on a comic called Chakan the Forever Man, who looks a lot like this, like with a dumb hat like that, too.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
I hope that my defining characteristic someday is that she wears a dumb hat.
You know, only you can make this happen, Gina.
That's true.
That's right. No one else is in charge of this.
I can't decide if it's going to be a Viking helmet. Mm-hmm. Or a sporty top hat, or perhaps one of those old-timey leather pilot's hats.
Gina, that's a good look.
Go to the store, find a hat that suits you and your personality. Maybe a fascinator, maybe a beret, maybe it's a top hat, whatever works.
Gina thought the best use of her time was to show up to places dressed like Randy Quaid from Independence Day. She got noticed for all the right reasons. Mixing this is going to be hellacious. I can already tell that none of these jokes are going to land because people are going to go just endlessly on Twitter. I can't hear anything you're saying.
Just static and vibration all the way.
Right. Assume we're laughing at very funny rumbling.
just assume that our guest, our special guest, beside other than John Brennan, is character actor Ted Levine.
Ooh. I don't think I sound like that. So one of the things that I quite like about this parade sequence is it must have cost all the money, or they actually did it during an actual parade.
It was filmed in Czechoslovakia.
Like, what?
Like, oh my God. This overlapped with when he was filming one of the Hostel movies.
Ah.
And so, like, I think that the actress that played the grandmother was Czech, and like that's why some of the actor that plays Bobby, Jay Hernandez, I think his character, the actor's name, he was in Hostel 2. So he got a lot of recycled a lot of the cast and a lot of the crew to do that doesn't explain how they did a parade sequence or why
it explains something about that parade sequence though.
How so?
The tiki head?
No, that's a big part.
Yeah, I mean, the only way you can really tell that, yeah, American Thanksgiving. I mean, what would you know about that?
That is true.
Yeah. Dude, why don't you educate me on how I celebrate Thanksgiving, Brandon?
Yeah, we serve, as evidenced by Ivanka Trump, we serve our Thanksgiving dinner in a giant clamshell. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we do it with flair.
Check out those sex clams.
You know, we have you ever seen a Charlie Brown? Have you ever seen a Charlie Brown Thanksgiving where they serve jelly beans and toast? That's 100% an accurate depiction of American Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And also, children are often left to get to their grandparents' houses by their own devices.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, for sure. What am I going to take you in a car? That's not how this works.
I gotta go give haircuts, man. I'm open all year round. I don't get holidays off. But, I mean, I think that I'm pretty sure that the only visual evidence that this is actually a Thanksgiving parade is that someone is dressed like a turkey. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think it just looks like a parade. So it's entirely possible he may have just said, okay, here we're just gonna do this thing. We're gonna have this actor in a turkey costume and he's gonna act like his head gets cut off.
I mean, there are a lot of American flags, but they all seem to be bordered with yellow fringe.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Yeah, it's very weird.
They're like, get some American flags. And like, okay, well, this was up in a bar down the street. Will this work? He's like, it's going to have to. The other thing that I really love is that the guy who puts on the turkey costume can't raise his arms with the wings. So he's like, yeah, put it on my head, put it on my head. He just motions with his head to put it on there. But he's got to prepare.
He's got his conductor's bayonet thing. Or not, what is it? Baton. Sorry, not bayonet.
That would make parades so much more exciting. Just swinging a bayonet. Someone who's wearing a costume where they can't see anything, just swinging a bayonet around.
So victim number two, I think, of the victims we've covered, I've covered personally on your show, is the most attractive. He's just a cute little... I like, 20-something bearded guy with a cute little chin strap beard, I think.
Now, would you date someone that short? Because you're a tall gentleman. Does that sort of size differential, is that something that you're okay with? Because he seems like a tinier guy than you.
I'm 5'6", so I would assume.
Really? No, you are not 5'6".
I am 5'6".
You sound taller.
You sound taller. B, in every photograph I've ever seen of you, you seem like you're 6'3".
I put, I'm very good at selfies, and I like to put my cameras low for added effect.
And he wears tin can stilts.
Exactly.
You have blown my mind, Brandon.
He's adorable, this guy.
And he's down with putting on a turkey costume. So he's probably a fun guy.
Yeah.
He's laid
our
back.
A furry, maybe. Yep. If you're into that thing, if you got a Pottersville,
I want to see that. I want to see that movie so bad.
It's a movie. It looks like a standard Hallmark Christmas movie, but from what we've been able to gather from it, eventually the main character gets drunk and inserts himself into a Bigfoot costume and finds himself in the middle of a furry party in the woods.
And the best part, the leading man, Michael Shannon.
I thought like Pottersville was some sort of comedic riff on.
No, it's real and evidently it's real and evidently mostly sincere, which is probably the most mind-boggling part about it. I like to think that Michael Shannon isn't quite at the I have gambling debts part of his career.
But there's a lot of like Tom Lennon shows up. Tom Lennon does not need money, and he shows up doing an Australian accent, acting like Quint from Jaws.
Ian McShane is in it, I guess taking a break from American Gods. Judy Greer is in it, I thought up until yesterday when I heard that it was available in full on Amazon that this was some sort of elaborate prank, but it's real and I'm 100% going to watch it.
So seriously, like no joke, I thought the premise of that movie was what would life be like in Pottersville if that
That's just the name. It's just the name of the town.
Oh yeah. Man, okay, the movie I have imagined is so much better.
I don't know. Are you sure about that?
I don't know.
Does yours involve furries?
Yeah, I like furries. A lot of my Twitter friends are furries, for sure.
I think I would have never thought that a Christmas movie could be improved with the addition of furries, but I have been proven wrong.
There we go. Merry Christmas to us. So he gets his head chopped off.
And this whole sequence is amazing because obviously the crowd starts panicking. Somehow the guy carrying the axe manages to get away and they're just kicking this poor man's head around inside the turkey with the turkey mask. It is almost the best part of the whole. My only favorite part, the only thing I like more is when the very brief scene in which the murder is being investigated, which has the greatest line reading of any movie ever.
The entire thing of that, with the deputy reaching his finger into the blood and tasting it,
like he's testing cocaine.
Yes,
and like I just love that Michael Biehn, is that how it's pronounced? Michael Biehn, who's been in like 10 million movies and about 4 of them have been good. He just gets this disgusted look on his face and says, "Son of a bitch." I think I kind of just lost it at that minute because it's just, that's not even a reaction to something like this that a person would actually have. I mean, he was angry about it, that there was blood all over the street.
I definitely knew that he was a famous person. I just couldn't pick out which famous person that guy
was. Oh, yeah. I mean, if you throw a stone at like 80s and 90s cable, you're going to hit him.
Oh, he was in Terminator, sure. I mean, right?
Yeah, he was in The Terminator, he was in Aliens, and those are two of the 4 movies he's been in that are good.
I have one last question
Grindhouse
about the,
would be one of the, others.
The turkey costume. Mm-hmm. So you see them putting the head on the turkey costume. At that point, it's just a turkey. However, when you see it in the parade, they've put a pilgrim costume on that turkey costume.
It's a turducken of costumes because it's a hat on a hat on a hat.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, probably, you know, when in the Christmas parade, he puts like a Santa hat on, you know, Easter parade, he puts, they get a lot of use out of this turkey costume.
That's right.
You know, he
they have a lot of costumes.
For, you know, for the Valentine's Day parade, he comes out carrying a little bow and arrow with, you know, with you know, the quiver's got little arrows with hearts on the end of them.
You'd think that they'd just put like the whole costume together before he gets into it, but they're really like living through the experience of being that turkey and making the turkey put on clothes.
Yeah. Wait, no, is that how Canadian Thanksgiving works? Mm-hmm. You put a turkey in clothes?
Yeah.
And do you eat it at all, or you just invite it to dinner?
I assume that's Czech Thanksgiving.
Okay. That makes sense.
We mostly apologize to the turkey. We're very sorry.
Very sorry. Oh, we should have had you on for Terror Train for part of it.
I was very angry. I've actually seen Terror Train before. I remember David Copperfield.
Yeah, it's an interesting movie. it's close to being great, and then it kinda isn't. Oh well, we have a whole episode on Terror Train, people. If you haven't listened to it yet, do so today. So let's move on to our next sequence. Now Thanksgiving becomes a slightly different film, whereas before, we had a killer who was just killing what appeared to be random people in that parade sequence very publicly. Mm-hmm. Now we have a bit of a stalker situation going on. We meet two people in a gym in a scene that is obviously referencing Final Exam because it's a darkened, abandoned gym. Movie that everyone knows, Final Exam.
We've seen some shit, man.
Gina, do you know what he's talking about?
I do, yeah.
Final Exam is a very uneventful slasher. It is full of, we might have to cover it one day, if only because it is filled with really interesting character choices. But it takes place on an almost abandoned college campus. And at one point, the jocks pull a prank where it's a drive-by shooting. They just pile out of a van with machine guns and start shooting into a crowd.
Hilarious!
Oh, yes. And then when one of the characters calls the sheriff and says, come here, he's like, why did you call me here for this?
It was a more innocent time.
Yeah. Obviously, no one's hurt. And why would I investigate people piling out of vans with, you know, masks on shooting people? Like, I have real things to cover. So, yeah, that's Final Exam. So, yeah.
See it today.
You could probably wait till tomorrow.
Yeah. It's out from Scream Factory. It looks better than it should. And it is very slow. Now, this is not slow. We meet two individuals who could not have more visual disparity if you tried.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 30 Rock, where Kenneth was pretending to be the husband of the receptionist girl, and he had to explain that the visual disparity between the two is because he is very wealthy.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's funny because it's true.
If this guy, this poor, unfortunate young fellow spoke, I sort of imagine him talking like the theater usher at the end of The Critic. Just a sort of, you know, in perpetual puberty, his voice is constantly cracking. And
you're
just...
right!
Oh, gee whiz! Now, he's
the
got
the... The show's over, sir!
He's got the fake teeth. Going that Michael Richards wore in the wonderful film UHF for the character.
I hope you don't mean that ironically.
I went and saw that in the theater.
That is a masterpiece.
It is great. And so he's got the Stanley Spadeli. I called him Young Stanley in my notes just for.
I think I might have written down Pizza Face.
Yeah, he has an unfortunate skin condition. You know, some things you can help, some things you can't.
But a real teenager.
It's obviously a choice.
He's also the only one playing, presumably, a high school student who actually looks like a high school student, mm-hmm. as opposed to 35-year-old at the time, Eli Roth.
He was just supposed to be a creep. That's the vibe I got out of Eli Roth. But,
well, he was wearing a Letterman's jacket, though, so I think he was supposed to be, like...
The next six characters we meet are all wearing... Yeah. It's a Letterman's jackets.
Yeah, it's the same. It's got to be the same jacket, I feel like.
He's watching this young blonde white girl with her shirt comes off in, I think, the third frame of her appearance.
I am impressed with her ability to jump on a trampoline while taking her clothes off, because I have actually, and not even in a seductive way, have fallen down while taking my pants off.
Not on a trampoline,
just standing in the middle of my bedroom, probably looking at my phone as I usually am, but I have done the whole legs getting tangled up, just all over the floor. So that is some skills to be jumping and making flirty faces and laughing and taking your clothes off without missing a beat. Although, of course, the fact that she is not wearing a bra probably helps, because that would be the most complicated part of it.
Mm.
But getting her underwear down? Underwear. While bouncing on a trampoline, like, that requires legitimate skills.
Yeah, she has to, like, I mean, it didn't go quite that far, but it looks like are we to assume that she just jumps up and, like, just jumps out of the underwear? Because, again, that would be amazing.
Just to put this in relief for everyone, not to bag on this kid's looks too much, but the visual disparity between the cheerleader and her boyfriend is so wide. Evel Knievel plans to jump it next spring in a rocket car. It is crazy. He gets what we assume to be a stealth sort of throat slashing. We're
you
not
don't
really sure.
See Let's anything, assume it's a throat slash.
We
no,
see,
he's like grabbed from behind and then like he like falls over. So you know, something involving a knife.
Yeah, he's just staring, and we see a black gloved hand, which is wearing different gloves than the gloves we've seen previously.
These wow, I didn't like notice driving that. Gloves.
Well, he's not wearing the hat either, is he?
All you see is the glove and the sleeve of his jacket. So we don't really get a clear view of what's happening. We just know that he's killed.
Well,
and then
if this was an official death list, I would put him as a question mark, because you don't know he's killed. He could have been like, just whispered off stage.
Be quiet for a second. I'm going to do something really cool, and I need you to just be quiet for me.
Dude, check out this shit.
You are not going to believe what I'm about to do. This is going to be crazy. People are going to freak out. And we have, for the first time in what feels like forever, a get bunked. We have a person who is stabbed through another thing.
Well,
it happened.
Hashtag
get bunked.
I don't. Can you count that as a get bunked? Because she kind of more just lands on it.
She's stabbed through another thing.
Right.
Impaled.
And also,
she's impaled.
Impaled. Yeah. That's. And also, he exhibits Jason Voorhees's remarkable ability to figure out without seeing someone where they're going to land, or lean against, or roll over on, or without having just the sweet spot of where to put this weapon. So the
or
person
he's studied her trampolining style and just knows how she bounces.
And he also assumed that she was just going to, you know, land on her ass and then come back up. I mean, that's also some pretty good deductive abilities.
Now, is it a sensor thing, or is that just supposed to be film wear, so you don't actually see the details of this kill?
Oh yeah, I mean, I think it's just supposed to be implied, like that. Yes. That's. I mean, I doubt that in an actual movie it would go much further than that. I mean, I hope that it wouldn't, because that's kind of a little horrifying to ponder. But I mean, that's.
But it's also not an injury that one would die from immediately.
Oh, well, but what?
On the version I watched, there was film marks over her nudity, so you didn't really see.
Oh yeah, you definitely saw a different version. I mean,
No. The theatrical one has film noise over.
Oh, I guess
her
it does.
Crotch as she's coming down.
Yeah, yeah. So
that
mean,
is an intentional
okay
thing that they're attempting to do there, to tease the audience with more nudity than you're going to get.
Right. I need to come back. I need to come back to this. She wouldn't die immediately. I feel
okay.
that.
Some questions
that,
about that.
I feel that she probably would. I mean,
I'm not saying that she wouldn't die, Gina. I'm just saying if you were to land ass first
I don't think
you wouldn't go, oh, that's all I have to give, and then just die immediately.
Was that first?
I don't think that was supposed to be there.
What is the flattest surface that is coming down? We're getting really weirdly
Do I really need to create some sort of chart and go on video and kind of show you what this is? I mean, it's not okay. I will say it's not a plausible injury. I mean, I don't think that you would so perfectly land on this thing. I mean, I'd probably go in her leg, which, again, you don't want a knife in your thigh either, because that's not going to lead to anything good. A lot of
arteries there.
Yeah, including the major one. So, yes. But yeah, what's the point we're trying to make here?
I don't know. Listen, all I'm saying is, it's not that she wouldn't die from it. It's that she wouldn't, just like a stab wound to the stomach wouldn't kill you immediately. You wouldn't just drop over. That takes a while for you to bleed out. That's all I'm saying.
This is definitely filmed in a way where the audience, as trailers are supposed to be, that you'll want to see what happens next.
Yes, it's just the impact. That's what we're trying to get across, and it does that very well.
She chose the wrong time to land in splits, though, because before she was bouncing on her legs. This is the only time she lands in a split, and somehow
the killer knew she was going to do that, which is pretty impressive.
He knew her routine. Listen.
Yes. He, like Jason, knows a person's fuck style. The Thanksgiving killer knows people's trampoline style.
Jump style.
We then cut to the Thanksgiving title card again, just for impact. We then cut to Eli Roth and the lead from Cabin Fever, Jordan Ladd.
Jordan Ladd, yeah. And we get to see his astonishingly hairy thighs.
Oh man, he's got a lot of hair, and he has decided, I'm going to find a way for me to make out with Jordan Ladd, and that is to write this fake trailer and insert myself into it with her.
Can I just say that the Foley in this scene is pretty cringeworthy.
So much mouth sounds.
I have a note about the Foley here, honestly. Because there's a gulp sound, which implies
there's definitely a gulping sound.
Yeah. Yes. Means this is a very short experience.
There's also the plan of attack going on here in terms of how this blowjob is being achieved, which is almost like Eli Roth is giving some sort of hurricane rana to her face. He's completely straddling her with both his thighs. Mm-hmm.
Kind of a Xenia on the top thing.
Yes. Yes.
If you see GoldenEye. Now, they're in big 50s. I'm normally pretty good at picking cars, but 50s is a blind spot for me, but it's a big 50s convertible.
This is definitely evoking the 1988 version of The Blob, which has a very infamous, almost date rape sequence in which a guy plies a girl with too much alcohol, and when after she passes out, he reaches his hand into her blouse and comes up with the blob inside, as eaten her from the inside out.
Oh, gross.
Such a great scene.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. It's the best. If you have not seen The Blob,
gross.
It's so good.
It's good, and it's gross, and it really holds up.
It's without a doubt in the top 10 of 80s horror films, and that is saying something for that decade. It is so much better than anyone gave it credit for. And the special effects in it are amazing. You will not know how they created the blob. Until the end, when it gets a little stop motion-y, every sequence in it with the blob, you're like, how the fuck did they do that?
Now, I always confuse it with the stuff. Which do you prefer?
The blob.
Oh,
the blob. The stuff gets a little gross, but it's in a very obvious B-grade special effects sort of way. And it's very silly.
Yeah.
The blob, I would say, probably could use a slight dose of humor to it. But other than that, I mean, I would say I'm sure, if we get letters, we would get letters for this. I would say it's on the same par as The Thing. In which, the Thing is definitely much grosser. I actually just saw a screening of it last week, and man, do those special effects hold up. I mean, you see on that big screen, and you're like covered in viscera afterwards. But it's very much the same sort of almost body horror, where like people's faces are melting off, and just like the fake out of somebody like moving a body, and then like the person's your torso is gone, and it's very gross. And again, similar to with the with what Patrick said about how you kind of, it's a little shaky in some spots with the stop motion, but other than that, it really holds up.
If you haven't seen The Blob,
I will
go see The Blob.
I will
see the blob.
So Eli Roth is propositioning this girl, and we got her first name in the movie. His girlfriend is named Judy, and
yeah, Judy is she kind of changes allegiances pretty quickly.
Yes,
he's wearing these red orange briefs though that I want. I think they're really cute.
Yeah, he's got those little tiny undies on.
I like little tiny undies, and they got the white piping, which is a very 70s 80s thing.
I mean, I cannot pinpoint at one point just when exactly men returned to wearing boxers, but certainly 70s and 80s were still wearing the tiny underpants.
So during this blowjob, which contains a lot of mouth noises.
It's juicy.
I love her happy Thanksgiving, baby.
Is oral sex something you really give someone as a Thanksgiving gift?
Do you give
anybody a gift for Thanksgiving? Now, is this a gift giving occasion? Well, other than if you have a significant other,
give them the gift of oral sex this Thanksgiving. Let's all do it.
I mean, I guess, you know, it kind of keep in keeping with, you know, the real gift is your presence. I mean, that's definitely your present. So you don't get more present than giving someone a blowjob in an antique convertible. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Happy Thanksgiving. Eli Roth gets decapitated, and we kind of hear him
He lets us a little like, ugh!
Yeah. We assume that to be something else. It turns out he's been decapitated. This immediately flips over to Judy now with another person.
Well, wait. We forgot to mention that the killer flings his head at the windshield of the car.
Yeah, that's right.
And he apparently may have achieved orgasm at the same time, because she is swallowing as she's feeling up his chest to find out that he has a neck stump.
Well, I mean, without getting into too much, I mean, I realize we've already discussed what kind of injuries one would sustain by having a knife, you know, forcibly, when someone forcibly lands vagina first on a knife. Mm-hmm. I mean, you generate a lot of saliva during this occasion. Mm-hmm. So it's possible. I mean, it obviously was not that, you know, it's supposed to imply that, you know, he's 17 or so, and, you know, that your stamina at 17 is not great.
Right.
And it's just, you know, a little gross out and a little, you know, the gulping. I'm like, oh, God, really?
And it's a very exaggerated. It's like a...
It's like taking cough medicine. She should have been like holding her nose or something.
And so after Eli's head lands on the windshield and we get another Thanksgiving title card, Judy is making out with yet another lettered high school person.
This is Bobby.
Right.
Who doesn't seem particularly alarmed that she is telling him that her last boyfriend just had his head cut off.
Well, you know, how much are you going to believe a girl when she comes screaming out of the forest saying that her boyfriend that she was giving a blowjob to was just decapitated? I mean, you can't take that at face value. Mm-hmm. You have to discount it in some way.
Maybe she's polyamorous and she was dating both of them at the same time.
Yeah, that's a very true.
Positive way to view it.
And Bobby may be thinking, finally, it's just me. The other one's out of the picture.
I got you all to myself. They start making out in the loudest way possible. And then incomprehensibly, while Judy still has his head in her hands, he is decapitated. His body just falls away. And the killer's right behind it with the brim of the hat still well over his eyes. And
it's a pretty good prosthetic head going on here. That was a good head.
Yes, it was.
Oh, wait.
As opposed to what happened in the car.
Both those heads are better than the decapitated head that is used in Friday the 13th Part 7. That looks 100%. Like it was molded out of old bubble gum.
100%.
We then get title card Thanksgiving. We meet the same grandma we saw in the very first sequence. Mm-hmm. Family is coming home.
Happy Thanksgiving, Grandma.
And then we cut to all of them at the table.
Tied up. Very specifically tied up.
And the killer, wearing an apron.
A bloody apron.
Pulls back a sheet that is covering the table to what is a roasted human being mm-hmm.
with what looks like a stuffing horn sticking out of his ass.
Yes.
Now to add
it's a cornucopia.
Ass vagina confusion. At first I thought that would be where the lady place would be, but I guess not, right?
I don't know that I am able to determine the sex of this individual. There is a thermometer sticking out of the very low abdomen of this individual and appears to be stuffing coming mm-hmm. out of two locales.
That's upsetting.
It's very upsetting. This person is trussed, and I don't know what oven he managed to get this human body into. And to think of how long he roasted it is in and of itself.
How long would you roast a 180-pound human?
I don't know.
It depends on how you take your meat.
Mm. That's right. Basting. Listen, that the skin of this human being that has been roasted is perfect.
Perfect.
This person has a lot of skills. Like, you don't just wake up one day and go, I'm going to do this. And then this is your first result. Like, this is a crazy amount of beginner's luck, if it's that. But everyone is staring at this, and their immediate reaction is to throw up. And the little kid who's tied up next to the guy who throws up is kind of smiling when that guy does it.
I assumed at first this was going to be grandma tied up from the first shot. But you see in the reverse, there is a lady who looks just like grandma at the table tied up.
Yes. And this person, again, I'm not entirely sure if those are breasts or pecs. You honestly, I don't think you can tell. It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. But it should be noted that there are those little miniature chef hats on each of the person's toes.
And fingers.
Like, the effects house that put this together, I assume it's the same effects house that does The Walking Dead, the KB group. They must have been delighted to come up with this concoction, because it should be noted that there's another Thanksgiving turkey at the table. Only a person's head has been sewn onto it. And it's either Eli Roth's or Jay Hernandez's head.
The killer in this really goes for presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, my main question here, when I saw this scene, is you have the whole family, it looks like about 12 people, tied up at the table. And they're waiting for the dinner to be displayed, but they're very shocked by it. How did he get that body there? Was the body there first, and he brought the kidnapped people to the table?
That's what I assume.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't think there's any other way to do it to have an actual reveal.
Well, yeah. A one man lifting I'm fairly strong. I don't think I could lift a 200-pound body on a serving platter like that to a table.
Yeah, we're not dealing with reality here. This is we've gone beyond that point with this.
I mean, when you have a movie in which someone can be making out with someone and not be aware they just had their head cut off, I think, you know, all bets are off, you know, as far as trying to remain logical and realistic.
We then slam into the final Thanksgiving title card and cut to this very odd scene.
Oh, God.
The pilgrim, let's say, having sex with the turkey with the head on it.
Okay, so I was half right then, because I said that I'd had a Mandela effect moment where I remember just being the turkey, and then I watched it again today. I'm like, oh no, there's a head there. Okay.
He's holding onto the head by the hair. He is naked. There are two minor children.
Oh God.
Also in the
show. Do you really think he cares at this point?
I don't. What do you pay these children for this?
That wasn't this in the version nuts. I watched. Uh-huh. This whole scene was not there. This is
really
disturbing. I'm gonna have to find this alternate cut, because yikes.
Yeah, it is a little blurb at the end of it that is the sort of button at the end of it all. There's again a lot of Foley work being done in terms of
it's squishy
floppy sex noises.
It is squishy and upsetting. I actually discovered, thanks to the Netflix series Mindhunter, that there is a a term for having sex with a human head, let's just say, without the consent of the person whose head that belonged to, who the head belonged to. Mm-hmm. I am attempting to look up Irrumatio, Irrumatio. So there, you've learned something from listening to Kill by Kill. There is a word for that.
Wow.
Oh, I don't want to know these things.
So he wasn't having sex with the turkey? He was having sex with the head in the turkey?
No, he's having sex with the turkey.
Oh.
The head is at the end of it.
So he technically kind of is.
He's basically having doggy style sex with a turkey, but the head is still as attached to the other end of it.
Oh,
this has gone in a very weird direction. This is the most sexual edition of Kill by Kill we have ever done. No, you don't have to be sorry. You didn't choose this. Gina chose it.
It's true.
So that's pretty much it for Thanksgiving. Any final thoughts?
This really is the best thing that Eli Roth has ever done. I am not particularly a fan. I have seen, I guess you could say, it would be fair to say I've seen 2.5 of his movies, because I've also watched the movie within the movie of Inglourious Basterds, which he directed.
Oh, wow.
People seem kind of surprised that I don't like Eli Roth movies, because particularly I think with horror, people expect you to like everything in the genre. I've actually heard, you know, what do you mean you don't want to see Blair Witch 2, Book of Shadows? You love horror. and I don't watch all of it. I mean, it's a very extensive genre, and I don't have the time or the wherewithal to watch all of it. But yeah, I don't find his movies particularly enjoyable. This short is evidence that he does have a sense of humor, which is not evident in any of his other movies. They're all kind of bleak and unpleasant and you know, gross in a not fun sort of way. But yeah, this is definitely outside of his wheelhouse, and it's a lot of fun. I mean, it's not quite as good as Don't, but it's up there.
I am not a tremendous fan of Mr. Roth's work. I think he's probably one of those guys, and I've said this before, that he probably is, you know, he has all the right references. He's seen all the right movies. He's a genuine, enthusiastic fan of the horror genre. And when in a group, when Quentin Tarantino goes, oh, you know, like that, you know, that one from 1978, he has the answer. And so he's going to always be in that crew of cinephile vidiots like savants. But that doesn't always necessarily translate to his films, which seem to have ideas, and I don't know that he has the skills to convey those ideas in the manner that I enjoy. That being said, if you like Mr. Roth's work, this is not an issue. You should always like what you like, and this does not harm anyone else. But I have, outside of this, yet to see the Eli Roth film that really brings me around to him as a filmmaker. And this is, I think, distills what he can do if he wanted to. And its advantage is that it's only, you know, 2 minutes plus long. John?
I've seen Hostel and I've seen Cabin Fever. And I feel like he's got almost a puritanical sense of, he likes to explore sex and the way sex and horror intertwine. But unlike something like The Fly or The Brood, he doesn't do it in an interesting way. It always comes off very judgmental on any, like, what's the name of that director that does The Brood?
Oh, Cronenberg.
Yeah, unlike Cronenberg has an appreciation for the female body, that, and I feel that Eli Roth hates it. Like, just every time he it interacts with women, it's always just violent and not exploring in an interesting way that I find very, very off-putting in his movies.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
It's particularly evident in something like Hostel 2, in which he's trying to reverse course of some of the themes of Hostel.
Right.
And presenting three female protagonists. And then at the same time, he's done a completely flip side of the hostel movie, where he has two grown men who are going to participate in the hostel system. And those two halves of that movie don't really meet. And people don't really talk like human beings. It's not really for a lack of casting bad people. And it's just, it just comes off-putting. I really disliked the Green Inferno, and I wanted to like it. That was the one I really wanted to.
I didn't even get that far. I watched Cabin Fever and like half of Hostel, and then I was like, you know what? I'm good. I've got this. This is all I need to see.
Hostel had one good scene, I thought, because there's the two guys that are very bro-y, and then there's their third nerdy friend, and the nerdy friend flirts with the doctor on the train, who's also a man, and they're obviously into each other. Like, there's a homosexual attraction between the two that I thought was very well observed because it was so quiet and not overt, and it was someone who was very uncomfortable with the friends who he's obviously attracted to, and I thought that was really, really cool, but the rest of the movie was not interesting.
I wish he would break himself of the formula, perhaps, and find a way to deliver a film that was just different. Mm-hmm. And I think he wants to do something within the formula, and it doesn't quite fire. So let's break this down. It's time once again for that Thanksgiving treat we all look forward to after we've filled ourselves up with gore. It is Choose Your Own Death Venture time, and we're going to make some assumptions here because some of these deaths are very obscure. But up for choice, we have stabbed with a carving knife, decapitated while you're inside of a turducken-like turkey-slash-pilgrim costume. we have what we assume to be a throat slit. And then a get bunked through a trampoline, a BJ decapitation, a makeout decapitation, and then have your body dressed up like a Thanksgiving turkey.
And defiled.
And defiled. In unimaginable ways. And John, as our guest, I turn to you first for your answer.
Okay. I'm going to say I'm going to be a Amish-looking beardo guy and get my head chopped off while at a parade, because it looks like he's having fun right up until the very second he dies.
Well, we don't know how long that parade route has been up until that point. It could have been like 8 or 9 Czechoslovakian blocks. Oof. So,
well, maybe
you
I
have to take that into consideration. Well, you're stuck with it
now.
Damn it. Sorry.
Sorry. You made it. Sorry. It's pronounced sorry.
Sorry. Gina, what say you?
Patrick, we've been doing this for over a year now. I think we've gotten to know each other and you know, we formed a bond. And you know that I have to go with decapitated in a turkey costume. I tell me you wouldn't be shocked if I picked any other one but that one.
No, I can totally see it. It makes perfect sense. And anyone who has listened to the podcast for as many episodes as we've done at this point will know that I will take out the makeout decapitation, not the BJ decapitation, because I don't want to be found with my pants down. I want to be found fully clothed.
And you'd have to be wearing tiny orange underpants.
Yeah. No, that's not it doesn't look good with my skin tone, is what it comes down to. It's fine. I don't look good in yellow. It doesn't mean that yellow clothes are bad. It's not good for me. All right. Well, that pretty much does it. John, where can people hear from you and say, I love that John Brandon. I want to hear his voice more often. What does he do?
I would recommend tracking down the Square Roots podcast, where we, one game at a time, over a series of episodes, go through very exhaustively, just like this podcast, every detail of your favorite role-playing games, like Final Fantasy VII, which we haven't done yet, or like Chrono Trigger, which we did just do, and we're doing Parasite Eve right now, which is horror-themed, so, horror? Yeah, you'll like that?
Excellent. Check it out today, people. Gina, where can people find you on the internet?
I write about 70s and 80s television at tuneintonight.wordpress.com. I just finished the emotionally and spiritually exhausting task of reviewing all 3 Amy Fisher TV movies.
Don't let this work go in vain, people. Read all about the 3 different times major networks said, we have to tell the Amy Fisher story. I don't care if the other networks are doing it.
Two of them on the same night.
Jesus Christ. No wonder it's the golden age of television. I mean, for crying out loud.
Is Amy Fisher the Buttafuoco lady?
Yes, Buttafuoco. I've mm-hmm. heard three different pronunciations of Buttafuoco, and every movie did it differently.
Hmm. The Long Island Lolita, as she was referred to. Do it today, people. Check it out. And if you want to contact us at the Kill by Kill podcast, there's an easy way to do it. Just check us out on Twitter at Kill by Kill Pod. You have something longer to say than 280 characters? It's possible. Email us, killbykillpod@gmail.com. Check us out on Instagram at Kill by Kill Podcast. We do fun things over there. And of course, if you like the show, please rate and review us on iTunes. We haven't had a new review since August, and I know that we have a lot of new listeners to the podcast since we were featured on the AV Club and so somewhat. And if you like what you hear, please do us a favor. When you give us a good review on iTunes, we get seen by more people, we're highlighted more often. And if you tell us what your favorite kill is in the Friday the 13th franchise, or even Thanksgiving, we will talk about it here on the air. That is our solemn promise to you, the Kill by Kill listener. And that does it for us, for myself, for Jim, for John. The body count will continue next time. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Kill by Kill is produced by We Write Good and is intended for entertainment purposes only. Friday the 13th is owned by Paramount Pictures. Jason is owned by New Line Cinema. No infringement is intended. Kill by Kill logo was designed by Josh Hollis. Visit him at joshhollis.com. The Kill by Kill theme was created exclusively for us by Revenge Body. Get the whole track and much, much more at revengebodymemphis.bandcamp.com today.